Okay, good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to another episode of The Cross and the Crescent, or on my Blog Talk radio show, we are calling it The Real Interfaith Dialogue. Today's topic is going to be one that we would thought would have brought many of our Islamic friends with us today, but evidently not. Today we're going to be talking about, has the Quran been perfectly preserved? This is a topic that Muslims often like to talk about. They often like to talk about the perfect preservation and transmission of the Quran from Allah to Angel Gabriel to Muhammad, and then into the written form that we have today. There are many challenges to that, many problems with it, especially in light of modern scholarship. And we're going to be having a roundtable here. Today we have our friend Jay, who's with us again, and we have a new guy. I'm just going to refer to him as Ed. I love his he's got a you'll see the icon when I post this up on my my Facebook page. And we have another person by the name of Barack that hasn't decided to chime in. But if Barack ever wants to chime in, there's a button there where you can raise your hand, and we'll be more than happy to bring you in. Now, I did see that Chris was here. He says, I'm busy for about 30 minutes. That's the message that he meant. His anniversary was evidently this week, and it was all over his Facebook page. Okay, so what I'm going to do is I'm just going to open it up real quick with just a real short understanding of what I know about the transmission of the Quran and what we have today. And then I'll let any of our guests who would like to opine on that. I did receive an email from our friend Radical Moderate, Robbie Wells, that is from a website that is a spinoff of Dan Brubaker's book that outlines the errors that we find in the Quran. Okay, so how this all worked, and if there's a Muslim that comes along here and wants to correct me on this, I'll be more than happy to do that. Yes, I forgot to turn on my Facebook Live over here. Sorry. Okay, here I'm live over here on my Facebook, Radio Free Conspiracy Fan. Welcome, everybody. the way that this supposedly happened is that the Quran is an eternal book that has resided in heaven with Allah for all of eternity. This is a book that is supposed to be God's last message to mankind. He transmitted this book over the period of 23 years from Muhammad, from 610 AD to 632, through the angel Gabriel. This is the only time that when we find God's word being transmitted through an angel to mankind. It's been given mostly under the inspiration of the Holy Spirit directly to man and have them to write it down. But Muhammad received this over the period of 23 years, and he recited it. That's what the Quran means. It means recitation. And people would then memorize what he had recited. And then after Muhammad had died, and the Hafiz, I can't remember what you call somebody who's memorized the Quran completely, but there was a battle that Abu Bakr put them all out in, thinking that, well, if you put these guys out, there's a secret weapon saying that Allah's word will never never fade away or never die out. And lo and behold, many of these people who had memorized the Quran were killed in this battle. So it was Uthman, the third caliph, who decided to take all of this, these people who had written it down on rocks and bones and pieces of wood and parchments and other things and the memorization of other people, and compile it into a Quran, into the book. And he did this, I believe it was 651 AD. And then all of the writings that he had gotten and edited and put into the Quran, he took them out and he burned them. I think he burned them because there was a lot of discrepancies amongst them. And this is normally what happens when you have a lot of discrepancies and you want to destroy the evidence and you don't want to start people arguing and fighting amongst each other about which one should take precedence. And then he sent these I think there were seven of them. They call it the Uthmanic recensions out to the seven biggest cities in the region at the time. And this is supposed to be the Quran that we have today. There are all kinds of problems with this scenario. And I'm going to bring Jay on, and I'm going to let Jay, if you want to go ahead and discuss what type of issues or problems that we have with that scenario, that Quran that Uthman edited and then sent out to everybody, and why you think that this isn't the Quran, or is not the pure Quran that we have today. So, Mr. Jay, are you there?
All right. Yeah, thank you. I want to comment first on the hadith itself, where we have this story. And so the Muslims, it starts out by rushing to Uthman, and they're saying to him to save their nation so that they don't end up like the Jews and Christians. And how do you save the nation? By preserving the Quran, because there's so many differences between these people's recitations, people in Iraq, the people, all the sorts of different recitations, all these different problems, that they were afraid they would end up like Jews and Christians. Now, you really have to think about that for a minute. If the Quran was at a time before, before these were compiled and, had a government issue sort of edited version of the Quran, think about that, that the fear was that they would end up like Jews and Christians if it wasn't for this Quran, this government-made Quran and destroying of the other Qurans. So if you think about the differences that Jews and Christians have, we have some pretty significant differences between us. We have theological differences, a lot of differences, major differences. How we conceptualize God, how we conceptualize the Messiah, these are major salvation issues. So imagine that, there was a time when Muslims were so afraid that they would end up just like the Jews and Christians differ from each other, that's how Muslims would end up. So that's telling us that these were some major differences in the Quran. And that's the first problem that I see when reading this hadith here.
Okay. So it was what you're saying is that they did this to prevent some type of internal strife.
Yeah.
Because over – okay. So – but – did it work? I mean, that's the question. Did it work?
It didn't work, though.
It sure didn't work. And I mean, they were at each other's throat with six. Yeah, I can hear you.
I have
a phone.
Yeah, I can hear your motorcycle, too. I'm going to mute you. You're not sounding too good. All righty, brother. I'm going to mute you. Let me go ahead and put you on mute. Okay, yeah, and I'll say that it didn't work right from the beginning. Not only was Abu Bakr fighting, the wars of apostasy to keep people from apostatizing from Islam, but it was Ali going to war with, who was Muhammad's nephew. He's going to war with Aisha and her army, for Pete's sake, over what the Quran should be and what the Quran should be. And this is where we see the Sunni-Shia split. And this occurs within, just a little over 30 years after the death of Muhammad. So the idea that the Quran needed to be written down and publicized so you wouldn't have a split did not save the religion at all. As a matter of fact, it's been 1,400 years of nothing but infighting and killing each other that still resonates today within Islam over this. I was going to say a couple things about this chain of transmission, because I ran into a couple discussions this week that we were trying to figure out. I was being asked several times, who wrote the Gospel of Matthew? Who wrote the Gospel of Mark? Who wrote the book of Hebrews? And all those questions are meant to try to confuse Christians. These are questions that we know that Muslims are trained to ask, but they're not really interested in knowing the truth. For example, how do we know that John wrote the Gospel of John? Well, we know easily why John wrote the Gospel of John is because the first early church fathers there at the end of the first century said he wrote the Gospel of John. And the same thing rings true with Luke. If we look at Luke, well, where did he get hundreds and hundreds of his verses? He got hundreds and hundreds of his verses from Matthew and Mark. Well, we know Matthew and Mark wrote them because they have their names on the book, the Gospel according to Mark, the Gospel according to Matthew. Notice that nobody else says the Gospel according to somebody who pretended to be Matthew and wrote Matthew. And everybody referred them to that. So that question was silly. But anyway, the point I was trying to make is that we know who wrote the epistles in the New Testament. We know who wrote the Gospels in the New Testament. But do we really know who wrote the Quran? Everybody says, well, it was from Allah. Okay, prove it. Well, everybody says it was then recited by Muhammad. Okay, prove it. Well, these recitations were written down and compiled by Uthman. Well, where did Uthman get these? Well, he got them from people who heard it from Muhammad. Okay, prove it. And the fact of the matter is that you cannot prove that this came from Muhammad, came from Allah in any way, shape, or form. It is through tradition that they say this, but the same thing is with the Christian faith, is through tradition and also direct transmission that we say that the Gospels of Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John came from those people who they're ascribed to. But you can't, you know, when you put the same type of scrutiny to the Quran, then it seems like it's a duplicit standard is what happens. Okay, Jay, did I unmute you? I'm sorry. Go ahead. Let me unmute you. There, go ahead.
Okay. All right, thank you. Yeah, I just want to say something about this chain of narration. One of the things that I see, so Muslims will say, like, you know, one of the methods that they use to dictate whether a hadith is authentic or not is by, well, number one, if it contradicts the Quran or not. Then number two, if the chain of narration, the narrators in it are trustworthy. And so they think that they can judge if someone is trustworthy or not. And I see a major problem, a major flaw with that, because if your method is, okay, we need to look at who's trustworthy and who's not in terms of, you know, compiling these different hadiths and who can we trust the narrators, well, it's going to create the problem of an infinite regress. And what do I mean by that? I mean that if you have to go to a guy and you go to his, you know, inside his book where he has like all these, you know, narrators' names and says this guy's trustworthy. In order to trust that, you need to trust the guy who's writing the book, and you need to make sure he's trustworthy. But in order to trust that, you need to have someone that's authenticating him, and someone's authenticating that guy, and someone's authenticating that guy. And so what it does is just increase this problem that you just can't undo, where you have to authenticate the guy who authenticated the guy who authenticated the guy, and you're not going to get anywhere. So it sounds like it's a nice, you know, solution, like, you know, this is how we can do it, but it really creates some problems that Muslims can't answer.
Okay. Now, I wanted to let me share the screen here, because I was going to show, how am I going to do this? Come on, you goober. I went to a website. What is this website? Answering Islam yesterday, and I brought up one of their articles that deals with whether or not the Quran has been perfectly preserved. And as soon as I figure out how do I do it, here we go. All right, share, screen two, ba-bing. Okay, and now if you look at this website here, the article itself is pretty lengthy. But when you start talking about perfect preservation of the Quran, it's essentially nothing but a mantra is what it is. We know that the Quran has been perfectly preserved. Why? Well, because we said so. Well, how do you know that it was perfectly preserved? Because there's no errors in it. There's no differences from all of the Qurans. Even one diacritical mark has been changed. Well, that turns out to be a bunch of bunk when we start making these side-by-side comparisons. And what this website does is, if you look here on the screen, guys, it outlines the differences. You got hops right here on the left side, where it says we give mercy And then over here in the Imam Warsh version, you have he gives mercy. Now, is that going to impact the meaning of the verse? I don't know. I would have to read the verse in its context. But does that clearly demonstrate that there are dissimilarities in the Quran, and therefore the Quran itself has not been perfectly preserved? And that answer, and that, I mean, this is the mantra that we hear all the time, is the Quran has been perfectly preserved, when in fact we just look right here at this one verse, it has not. You drop down here to the Hafs and the Warsh, comparing them again side by side, chapter 2, verse 140, it says you, plural, say, and then over here it says they say. So it's two different variant writings. Now, does that change the meaning of it? Who knows? Does it make any type of doctrinal differences? Probably not. But the problem is that there are variants within the Quran, and it has not been perfectly preserved. When you get... What did he just say, Jay? Did you hear?
I couldn't understand what he said. I couldn't make it out either.
Okay. I couldn't understand. Robert, what you're going to have to do, brother, is you're going to have to get to where you're going, and you're going to have to pull over and do something. Watch out for them.
It's way too much. Yeah.
Yeah, I think he's running red lights out there. I don't know what he's doing. Okay, so as you can see, here's just two differences right here. I see our friend Veritas Seeker dropped in here to the room. Okay, and then what Robert sent me something also. Let me bring this up over here. And this is from Dan Brubaker's book that outlines the differences in the Quran. Or in this case, what he's done is he sent me, it looks like 33 pages of where they have erased part of the Quran. They have erased some of the letters, maybe to change the word, or to change some diacritical marks. But this is from the Mushaf Sharif manuscript, and I don't know what I'm looking at here. Maybe you guys can help me out what I'm supposed to be looking at here on these things. Jay?
Yeah, it looks like what it's trying to show you is that there's a word that it's going to erase.
Yeah,
if you look right there, and it looks like kind of reddish, or I think it's
Does that change what the word is, or does that change the meaning when it does that?
I'm on my phone right now, so it's kind of hard to see the exact print, but
okay.
I think he's trying to show you just the eraser marks.
Yeah. Yeah, okay, and here you have, let's see, Al Hussein Mosque, the manuscript. Again, this is the Mushaf Sharif translation, so it struck them, and as you can see, part of the words here have been erased. You go to another one, you have an eraser here, again on the same, looks like the same manuscript. A couple other ones, I can't clearly tell on this one if there's what the erasures are. Oh wait, maybe right here, looks like something's been erased right there. There was one that I'd seen where they did, they taped right over a word. They took some tape of some sort and put it right over the word and just to block it out. Again, you have an eraser right here. Wow, this is pretty comprehensive. Look at that. It looks like they're erasing and then writing right over the top of it. It looks like, yeah, because it's not there, and then let's just write right over the top of it. Nobody will notice that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and here again, they're erasing. I don't see if they wrote over, but it looks like they did something or did away with something there. This is all the same manuscript, the Cairo Mushaf Sharif manuscript. It says a sinner, then there's eraser with information. So you can see that they erased here, eraser. And it looks like they're writing right over the top of the erasers. And this is in a Quran. Now, this is a book that, and here's what it's kind of hard to fathom. This is supposed to be, you know, if I'm some type of scribe or somebody that's responsible for a book like this, and I believe it's to be the word of God, why am I going about the business of erasing part of the word of God and then writing right over the top of it, unless I have some type of agenda to follow, if I'm trying to fix something, maybe to get it to accommodate current theology or current tautology within the religion itself, or maybe trying to change something completely. Here we have an eraser right here. Again, this is the Cairo Mushaf Sharif. More, oh my goodness, look at this. I don't even know, what is that? That looks like some type of, it doesn't look like some type of letter, Arabic letter at all. I don't know. I don't know Arabic, so I wouldn't know. But it looks like some type of moon star of some sort. Erase that. Erased here, out in the margins here. You can clearly see this was erased here, and then this was written over the top of it. Again, look at this. They just completely washed that sucker off right there and right here. And more. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and stop with this. But, I mean, this is pretty, I'm going to have to get this book. This is pretty good. And it's a different manuscript here. When did they change manuscript? Yeah, okay. It's a different manuscript that they're going with here. This looks like it's have all kinds of different erasers in there. Anybody here in the... Let me bring this back up. Stop sharing. Anybody here in the room want to opine, want to chime in? Anybody? Raise your hand. Nobody wants to chime in. That's kind of depressing.
Yeah, I'll chime in.
All right. Go ahead, Ed.
I have done some research into this as well. There's a fellow named Gabriel Sama who wrote a book, actually did a lot of research on the Sana manuscript, which is what Al-Fadi is going to be working on. And he said that the text in Sana was Aramaic Syriac, and that Yusuf Ali, Pikthal, all the guys who translated from Arabic to English could not read or write Aramaic Syriac. So they basically erroneously translated a lot of these verses from the Sana manuscript to the 1932 edition of the Quran. The 24 edition was the first shot at it. But we also see in a lot of the hadith, as Jai mentioned, that there's a lot of missing verses in the Quran. There's a lot of loss in the Quran itself, and we'll find this in Bukhari mostly. I have several hadith here that are from Bukhari, Book 93, Hadith 53, Book 66, Hadith 9. let me see. There's also Book 66, Hadith 8, so Hadith 8 and 9 go together there, and that talks about the Battle of Yamama. So, yeah, I know.
Yamama.
Yamama. So there's a huge problem. You know, we don't find anywhere in the early Hadith where the claim is made that the Quran is perfectly preserved until the 20th century, when the 1924 Quran comes out, and that's what I have so far.
Okay, so what you're saying is that this tradition that the Quran had been perfectly preserved did not really become a tradition until just the last century. Is that what you're saying?
That's what it's looking like, because all the hadith that we see here say different.
Yeah, in those hadith that you're citing, now you can correct me if I'm wrong, the hadith that you're citing there are the ones that are saying that, is that the one that says, well, Aisha's goat ate some of the Quran, and then there's 100 verses
actually,
missing out of one of the chapters, or?
No, actually, these are hadith mentioned by Zayd bin Thabit, Anas bin Malik. These are hadiths that didn't even have anything to do with the goat situation. These are hadith that mention Abu Bakr and Uthman and Umar, where they had talked about losing a major part of the Quran, and that they needed to write it down because they had lost so much of the
right.
Quran.
Right. Okay. Because of the Battle of Yamama. Okay. Yeah. All right. That makes sense. Yeah. And then the other thing is that there are hadith that said, because there's parts of the Quran, if I'm not mistaken on this, where the thing about breastfeeding a woman, your wife breastfeeding a man so the man would not lust after her 10 times, that was taken out.
That was eaten by a goat. Yes.
Yeah. That okay. And the one about the stoning of women, that was eaten by a goat. And there was
correct.
And there was another hadith that said there was over 100 verses that are missing, and then the satanic verses. If I'm not mistaken, those were taken out also. So you're absolutely right. There's a lot of it that's unaccounted for that was supposed to be in it. And even their own, if you follow the hadith, even their hadith say the same thing. Okay, Mr. Robert Wells has his hand up. I'm going to unmute him. He got off his motorcycle and is here now.
Hey, Robert. Can you hear me better now?
I can hear you a lot better now.
You hear me better?
Yeah, you're not riding that Suzuki anymore. It sounds a lot better. Just kidding.
What I was trying to tell you before you couldn't hear me was you actually pulled up that document. Just to correct you, that's not from a book. That's from the website. That has, but a huge library database of all the ancient Qurans that they have of photographs. And it's for scholars to examine and compare and look at this actual variant. That page contained all the erasures. There's insertions, there's deletions and insertions, which I didn't have time to get to because you only got a 7-day free trial and I ran out of my time. But yeah, so the Muslims will say, when it comes to perfect preservation, you can go on and go to Speaker's Corner videos, and you can see, all the Muslims say, no, it's perfectly preserved, not one dot, not one difference. They added the diacritical marks and the vowel markers, but the continental is exactly the same. That is not the case, because in the book that you mentioned, that's what he goes over. He goes over where there's continental differences. But in those documents, or that document I sent you, not only is there continental documents or differences, there's entire phrases missing. If you scroll all the way down to the bottom of that page, that's where the big ones are. It's like 3 or 4 lines that are completely wiped out and missing. And they were erased at a later time. Now, the funny thing is, so once a Muslim is confronted with this fact, they say, oh, no, it's perfectly preserved in the memory, it's perfectly preserved in the oral tradition. But you go to Speaker's Corner videos and you can see what these Muslims are saying, and says, no, that's not right. And there's actually one video, I think Jay knows that he showed it up, where they actually have to go to the written Quran to solve the dispute. Okay? So there are oral variants, I guess you could say. Not only that, but the whole reason for writing the Quran down, as Jay stated, okay, is because, well, one, they were getting killed off, those that memorized it, and two, there were all these differences in the oral text, okay? In the oral tradition, okay? But they were disputing amongst themselves, and let's face it, when it comes to the Quran, when Muslims dispute amongst themselves, it usually ends pretty violently, as there's a hadith that mentioned where God grabbed them, smacked them around, and pulled them out of the mosque and took them to Muhammad to say, which one is right? And Muhammad says, both of you are right. I said, okay.
Yeah.
But one more thing, I don't know if they brought this up, but there's one more thing. Here's the thing. And Jason, correct me if I'm wrong in this. Okay. All right. But remember Muslims say that there's what do you call it? The differences are in what do you call it? Dialectical differences. But when the Quran was first written down and compiled by Usman, well, Abu Bakr and Usman, you know, later on, okay, there were no vowel markers. There were no dialectical markers.
Right.
So there was no accent. There was no dialect, okay? So how are you going to preserve this? Because that's one of the reasons to write the Quran down, because, you know, to preserve these to preserve it so there's only one dialect, okay, so they're not quite amongst themselves. How are you going to do it without the dialectical markings? How are you going to do it without the vowel markings?
Right.
You can't do it. So that whole thing is just totally debunked. But anyway, I'm going to go back to listening. I'm going to give it some meat. So.
Okay. Yeah. Hey Robert. Yeah, I was just kidding about the Suzuki thing. I didn't really mean that. That was just kind of a joke. Sorry about that. All right, Jay, you got your hand raised, my friend. Go on ahead.
Yeah. Thank you. So just about the quick thing about Radical said about the accent, you know, dialect thing. And it's true that, you know, you have words that can differ in, like, you know, pronunciation. Like maybe some dialect will use different vowels. Like some will use A vowel versus like an E or O vowel, whatever. That's true. But then, you know, another thing to differentiate between dialects would obviously be like actual vocabulary words or different ways to say things. So there's that as well. So that can be in just consonantal writing as opposed. So you don't really need to march for that. So just a note at that point. But like he said, there are differences in the different versions of the Quran today that exist today that are recited in Muslim countries, you know, like Morocco, for example, that differ, for instance, in like Egypt. There are differences where it's not just continental, not just vowels, but it's like sometimes you have a complete missing word, or if you look at the other way, the word that's added in. So how is there perfect preservation if you have, you know, one verse reading one way and another verse has, you know, a shorter amount of words or less words or more words. But a point that I wanted to make, which when Ed were talking about in regards to these, the hadith that talked about, you know, the missing verses and stuff, like this chapter used to be longer than chapter two, and then it got, you know, pretty much like 200 verses are missing from it, and the stoning verses and then breastfeeding verses. Question in regards to oral recitation and memorization. I mean, why aren't those verses preserved in recitation? I thought that the written text doesn't matter. That's what Muslims are always telling us. They would tell us that the written text is secondary, it doesn't matter. But why don't they have an oral preservation of, say, the suckling verses or the stoning for adultery verses? Well, why isn't there, you know, why isn't that retained in the oral tradition? Well, because the fact of the matter is that's what Muslims say, and Muslims will often challenge people and say, hey, if you guys burn all of the Qurans in the world today, then we can reproduce it within an hour because we have all these people who memorize the Quran. Okay, so if that's true, that the oral is what takes precedence, then why is it the opposite is true when we go through, like, actually what's written in the Quran, or actually what the Quran actually said. So, You could picture a scenario where something is taken out of the physical, the written Quran, but yet it's still preserved in someone's memory, right? You could picture that. But why isn't that's never the case, that the oral disagrees with the written? So suppose.
I'm sorry. Are you there, Jay? Uh-oh. It looks like my internet has dropped. Oh boy, this is not good. This is not good. Come on. Okay, we always have these kinds of problems. connect. Let me connect back to my internet. Just dropped. And we are connected again. We're trying to reconnect via Zoom. Looks like trying to reconnect. Trying to reconnect. Trying to reconnect. Okay, connecting, connecting, connecting. Let me see if I'm back online. Okay. Hey guys, are you still there? Hey guys, you still there? Hello.
Okay, I can hear you now.
Okay.
Yeah, you're back.
My internet connection dropped. So.
Okay.
That's okay. Who was talking there? Was that you, Jay? Okay.
So did your recording software just all drop too, or is that kind of reset?
Okay. Were you guys able to continue the conversation while I was trying to reconnect?
It gave the host to Ed. Yeah.
Okay. So. Okay. Are you saying I need to do something? What was that?
I was just saying, is your recording, like the way you were recording it, does that have to be restarted, or how does that work?
You know what? I just realized something. I have not been recording this thing. What a bonehead. Oh, my goodness.
But I guess on blog.
Well, it should be on.
A good thing I've been recording.
Yeah.
There you go, Ed.
Okay, well, it's going to be on Blog Talk Radio, but I'm not exactly sure how good the audio is going to be if it's just on Blog Talk. I just hit the record button now. Doggone it. I am such a... Okay, it sounds... Robert is... He's out to eat again. Hello, Chris. We see that you made it here. There is no question about rendering a period. Okay. What we were talking about was that the missing verses in the Quran, and what Ed has done. Is Ed still here? Ed's still here. He's posted in the chat several different hadith talking about what has been removed. And you made a great point, Jay, was that, okay, when we start talking about the perfect preservation of the Quran, when they talk, when we hear from Muslims, Islamic apologists, that the Quran has been perfectly preserved in writing, and we say, okay, but the writing itself, we have variants within it, so which one is true, which one has been perfectly preserved? And they said, well, it's been perfectly preserved in the recitation. Okay, if we're going to go with that mantra, then what about the verses that have been articulated in the hadith? For an example, this one right here that Ed posted, the verse of stoning and of breastfeeding an adult 10 times was revealed, and the paper was with me under my pillow when the messenger of Allah died, where we were preoccupied with his death, and a tame sheep came in and ate my homework. Okay, so if it wasn't in the Quran to begin with, then it would have been in the oral tradition, but this one isn't even in the oral tradition. So that argument falls to pieces. And then this one here, the prophet had a man and a woman of the Jews who had committed fornication stoned to death. So this was taken out of the Quran because it was in there before. And then this one is, let's see, I asked Abdullah bin Abi Awfa, did Allah's messenger carry out the Rajam penalty, the stoning to death? He said, yes. I said, before the revelation of Surat An-Nur or after it? He replied, I don't know. So the bottom line was is that this was supposed to be in the Quran, but it's not there in writing, nor is it in there in the oral tradition. So when we start looking at the Quran and this mantra of it being perfectly preserved, it is easily disprovable. Okay, Chris has made it. And I hope you had a happy anniversary this week, Chris. You and your wife look like you were having a really good time the other night. Okay, go ahead, Chris. How are you doing today? Hello.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
So, yeah, I'm interested in some of these topics too. It's too bad we didn't get some Muslims here that so that we could have a dialogue with them as well. But I guess the only thing that I would bring up is even Ibn Masud, one of the best and well-known reciters of the Quran, I guess you would say, Muhammad, when he was asked to identify, you know, the top four people that you should learn the recitation of the Quran from, of course, Ibn Masud was the first one that he had pointed to. So we have this controversy between Ibn Masud and Uthman, even. Because in the Ibn Masud Quran, we have an extra two chapters. And we don't have that in the Uthmanic Quran at the time. And so on and so on. And the biggest problem here is that Ibn Masud identifies Uthman as basically somebody that doesn't know nothing and that he doesn't even follow the same God that Ibn Masud actually follows. So Ibn Masud has this animosity against Uthman, and he said that people that read the Uthmanic Quran are in deceit when they read it because Uthman has deceived the Muslims at that time. So we even have some well-known sources, like even like I just said, Ibn Masud, that identifies the corruption at the earliest stages of the Quranic manuscripts when it starts going on. And the problem with the recitation here, and even if we're going to grant to the Muslims that we that they have this chain of narration that goes all the way back to 680, right, whatever. Even if we grant that, which that's like a big-time telephone game to me, but let's just say we grant that. They could only recite it back to the Islamic time anyways. Because anything prior to that would have been burnt, and that would have been the standardized copy, and every memorization from that point would have been from that standardized Quran.
Okay, Chris, before you move on, and this was a point I brought up earlier, and I'm going to see if you agree with it. Why do you believe that Uthman had all of the previous material burned?
I believe that there was discrepancies between the earlier materials and what he had in his what he had put into his Quran.
Okay, I was just making sure I wasn't out to lunch on this one. My sanity is checked once again.
I was even showing some Muslims, when you look at the Sana'a manuscripts, which is a couple of leaves of a couple of different chapters of the Quran that dates back either before Muhammad's time or around or a little afterwards, right? Whatever you want to date it to be. There's actual endings of verses that are removed from the Sana'a manuscript, that are in the Sana'a manuscript that are removed from the Quran that people read today. And this is widely known. I've even referenced the guy's name, I believe it's Keith E. Small, The Textual Variations of the Quran. Excellent book. I would recommend that for any Christian to go and buy as well. Even when we talk about Ibn Masud, he identifies the corruption and how corrupt Uthman is. So anybody that really relies on Uthman, I really can't see that it holds much weight when there's that argument of Ibn Masud. Now, and we all know the famous hadith that states that the reason why they wanted to write the Quran down and standardize it, of course, is because the Battle of Yamama, where there was many people that knew the Quran by heart, that died. So these memorizers of the Quran, they were dying in these battles, and they wanted to be able to preserve the Quran just in case those memorizers died before they were able to transfer on the memorization to their students and whatnot. So this is why they ended up writing it down. And you'll read within the hadith, Uthman goes to Abu Bakr and says that this is pleasing of Allah. Now, what I've always found strange is that Uthman is not a prophet. How does he know what is pleasing to Allah and what is not? Because he wouldn't have been able to speak with Jibreel. That would have been Muhammad, right? So if Uthman's making these things up and it's just coming out of thin air and he's actually saying that Allah would like this, he's actually speaking for Allah. And I think that the Muslim world should have actually spoke out against that, because that's something that Muslims would never do today. They would never speak out against their Allah. So that's just my point of view. Just too bad we didn't have too many Muslims in here so that we could get some of the answers on that, of course.
Well, I, you know, based on the way that I posted this thing in groups, I wasn't expecting anybody to come. I with this new Facebook account, I'm still pondering on how I'm going to be sending out invites for friends and such, and I'm just kind of weighing heavily on whether or not I should include Muslims in that or not. And, you know, if you're going to have a discussion group with Muslims, you know, I guess that kind of tells me that I need to do it because you got a friend of mine on Facebook, but then again, that invites all of the other miscreants to come in and report you and try to get you. I mean, Robert's banned right now himself. He's got his hand up, so we're going to bring him in. And I'm going to tell you, Robert, in order to keep from getting banned on Facebook, you need to just learn to be a lot nicer to people. Robert, are you there, Robert? It sounds like Robert's at a restaurant. Yeah, I can hear you. It sounds like you're in a restaurant again.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I am. Is it okay?
Yeah, go ahead.
All right. As far as getting banned from Facebook, I don't know what you mean by that, but yeah, I don't know how. I mean, yeah. Anyway.
Misunderstood.
I just wanted to bring up and kind of correct you. Aisha did not go to war with Ali over the I forgot why you might have mentioned that. Basically, what you had happened was. Three Muslim armies rode out from three various parts of the fledgling Islamic Empire. Damascus, Egypt, and I forgot the other place. It wasn't Baghdad. But anyway, they rode out and they put Uthman under siege, supposedly because of nepotism. Okay? First the siege was really, really light. Okay, they just kind of surrounded the town, they stayed out of the town. And then they supposedly became a truce, okay, where they worked the deal out. And then they, so they left, and then they discovered a message that Uthman had sent to the Egypt governor saying to arrest all these men and execute them. And then they got pissed, and they rode back, and this time they surrounded his house, and they did not allow food or water to get in. Now, mind you, okay, all the townspeople in Medina, they were just all walking around talking about the regular everyday business, okay? The caliph is under serious threat, okay? One of the companions of the prophet, and they're doing nothing about it, okay? Ali was the only one. He tried to bring food and water and stuff like that, okay, to relieve the siege. But either way, in the end of it, finally, all of a sudden, the townspeople, they decide they're going to go on Hajj to Mecca. Now, mind you, all these people are contemporaries of Muhammad. They had all been on Hajj before, many, many a time, right? There's no reason to go on Hajj at this critical point in time, okay? All of a sudden, the townspeople, they get up and leave to go to Hajj, which leaves the gate open to murder Uthman, which they did. They killed him. They chopped him to pieces. Then, this is another thing. They let him rot in his own home for 3 days because they didn't want to bury him. Okay. Finally, under cover of darkness, Ali and a few others, along with a couple of wives of Uthman, under cover of dusk, okay, they snuck the body out. They went to go bury him. They were intercepted by these rebels. Okay. And they were prevented from burying him. Now, get this: in the Muslim quarter of the cemetery, they were only allowed to bury him in the Jewish part of the cemetery. This is how much they despise this man. Okay? They really, really, really despise it. Okay? All right?
Wasn't Aisha, like, Robert,
14 years later or so,
Robert.
That all of a sudden Uthman then was reverted back to Islam from his Jewish conversion at death because they knocked down one of the conquering Muslims that conquered Medina again. Knocked down the retaining wall, dividing the Jewish quarter and the Muslim part of the cemetery, thereby making everybody Muslim in that cemetery. Bizarre, I know. But anyway, so getting back to this, so after all this happened, Aisha and the major leadership were on their way to Hajj when this all happened. We're on their way to Medina. They got to Medina. I mean, this is called a civil war now, basically. Ali is named Khalid because they needed somebody. She gets word that Ali is named Khalid in Medina, okay? Oh, back up. Mind you, I'm going to tell you. One of the conspirators, one of the 400. Okay? I mean, this is how deep this stuff goes, right? So, they get word that Ali was named Ali. Aisha's having none of that, but she's a woman, so there's not much you can do about it. Okay? Sorry about that. So,
oh,
so she's having none of that. So she gets there were three warlords, okay, that she goes gets in line with. They raise up an army, okay, and then they go out to go do battle with Ali. It's called the Battle of the Camel. Now the Sunni person, even though they rely on the same person as Shia, they differ at this point. They say that Aisha was just an ambassador, okay, but why would she be in an army, okay? But anyway, the three warlords, they were killed, okay. during this battle, and then the remaining army that is fighting on her behalf, they surround her camel. That's why it's called the Battle of the Camel. And they all were pretty much butchered and shot down with arrows. And then finally, Ali said, "Hamstring that camel." They hamstring the camel, and Aisha was toppling out of her camel onto the desert floor. And then they decided to stop the killing. So there you have it. And that's why. And that's why, that's one of the main reasons why the Shia defy Aisha. So I just thought I'd correct you on that.
Okay, well, that's quite the history of that. I didn't realize it was so complicated. I knew that Uthman had been murdered. And I knew that Ali followed him. I just didn't understand all that. That history in between there. I thought it was just Ali and Aisha going at it, and Ali winning out, and Aisha was put into jail or something like that. I don't know. I worry about more what's in the Quran than the history of it, but that makes a lot of sense. Okay. What I wanted to do is I want to revisit this, since we didn't record this to begin with, these erasers, Robert, that you had sent me. Let me back up here. I'm going to share the screen, and you need to come back on. Where are you? You need to unmute yourself and come back on here. Let me share the screen and tell us what we're looking at here. Did I share it? Yes, there we go.
Sorry, bro, wrong time. They just brought my food. I'll eat.
They just brought you your food.
Yeah. Sorry, bro. Long time they just
bought out
my suit. I'm eating. Yeah, sorry, bro.
Okay. I'll switch it over to this right here. There we go. What we're going to do is we're just going to do a side-by-side comparison of these of what we find in these Qurans, and when this argument is made about the Quran being perfectly preserved. Orally, we just demonstrated if it was perfectly preserved orally, then you would have, let me go over here. There we go. You would have this right here in there. You would have these other things that Van or Ed's been sending me about how these verses about breastfeeding and the verses about stoning women for adultery and all these other ones that are not in the Quran anymore. They would have been in the oral tradition, but they're not in the oral tradition either. So when we do look at the written tradition, this is what we have in the Hafs Quran and in the Warsh Quran. Here you have the extra words. Allah is the self-sufficient. Allah the self-sufficient. So they're adding in a word. Now, just because you have a little is here, well, that's not a big deal. I mean, that doesn't really change the meaning of it. That doesn't change the outcome of it. It has no significant doctrinal basis or impact on Islam. But the fact of the matter is that this is a variant. This is different. You know, the argument has always, you know, been made, pointed at the Christians. Well, you have so many variants in your New Testament. Yeah, we do. But the reason why is we got 2.5 million pages of manuscript evidence. Beat that, buddy. But here we can sit here and see that you have variants also. It has not been perfectly preserved. And hasten to over here in the Hafs, over here in the wash, it's just hasten to. There's no and. Then we look at the graphical letter differences. And Ibrahim enjoined on his sons, and Ibrahim instructed, made his sons. So there's a difference between the wash and the hops. Again, differences. Turn back on here, and here you have it over here in 556. It's completely different, a different place. Here you have 2144. He said, my Lord knows. And then it says, instead of he said, it says say, my Lord knows. So if you look at the Arabic here, the script is different. Drop down in here. When you look at diacritical marks, when we look at the archaic archaic Arabic did not have diacritical marks in it. Archaic Arabic was just consonantal text without the vowelization with the diacritical marks. Well, when it started progressing and they started copying the Quran, the diacritical marks were added in to provide the vowelization. Well, when we look at where they put the diacritical marks, it changes the meaning of what it says. When the Hafs, it says in 258, it says, we give mercy. Where in the Warsh, it says, he gives mercy. You get down here where it says, you say in the plural form, and it says over here, they say. Well, it's just a small difference, but again, the Quran has been perfectly preserved. There's been no changes to it. That does not Warsh. Bad pun. When we look at that, and then you have the vowelization differences that are outlined here. And then you have on this website, it shows you the number of differences. So, of course, in the final analysis, when we say that the Quran has not been perfectly preserved, I started off the program with saying, okay, you're going to have to prove to me that Muhammad, number one, is responsible for the writing of the Quran, because the Quran is thought to be the eternal preserved word of God in heaven, transmitted through the angel Gabriel to Muhammad, and then Muhammad recited it to people who memorized it. Okay, you're going to have to prove that. Who are these people that memorized it? Okay, now you have hadith saying that, so-and-so memorized it, so-and-so memorized it. Okay, those hadith were written down 230 years later. That's just oral tradition. That doesn't prove anything. That's what we would call hearsay, because when you look at the what do they call them, isnads, those people who do the perfect or who memorize the Quran. You guys could help me out with that and tell me what they're called. But the bottom line is that
Hafiz.
What are they called?
Hafiz.
Okay, Hafiz. Yeah. You're right. Okay. What is the isnad? The isnad is the isnad the ones that.
It's not a chain narration.
It's the what?
The chain of narration.
Chain of narration. Okay, I got them mixed up. Okay, so you're going to have to prove that the Hafiz, or however you pronounce it, memorized it correctly. And then those people who did write it down, and these bones, these papers, papyri, skins that it had been written down on, it was written down unchanged. And you can't do that. And the reason why you can't do this is because Uthman took them all out and burned them. So the bottom line is you can't prove who wrote the Quran. And when you start applying that argument against the Bible and use the same standard, you know, you lose. You just don't have the manuscript evidence for it. Okay, Jay, did you want to come in and add something into this at all? Let me unmute you.
I'm all set for right now.
You're doing what right now?
I don't have anything to add right now.
Okay. How about you, Ed? Do you have anything to add?
Not me. No, sir.
Okay. And then Rad, what is he doing? Oh, he's eating a burger. Okay, that's right. At least he's not on his house. And I'm kidding. I shouldn't have said that. I know how Harley riders are. Who was it that said that they wrote a BMW? Was that? Because I think Veritas. Oh, that was Veritas. Because he PM'd me. When I said that, that's kind of a mean thing to say to Harley. I know that, I know how Harley riders are. They get very personal when you start talking about riding rice burners and so on and so forth. Okay, I was going to add one thing to this whole shtick about the Quran being perfectly preserved, and maybe you guys could opine on this or comment on it. In my feelings on it, it's really to me not a big deal, and here's why. When we start talking about the textual variants within the Bible itself, you know, you got 138,162 words in the Greek New Testament, and you have 450,000 textual variants in the manuscripts that we have today. That's a lot of variants. But there's no doctrinal, it doesn't impact church doctrine at all. I mean, they're all, 99.7% of them are just, you know, grammatical errors, word repetition, things of that nature. And then when we look at the differences that we have in the Quran, and I'm not aware, and I'm willing to be wrong on this, but I'm not aware of any doctrinal changes that are made because there are differences in the Quran. So to me, it's not a big deal. But if you would ask the average Muslim out there, to them, they make it a big deal. And the reason why they make it a big deal is because, well, in the Quran, it says that you can't change God's word. God's word cannot be changed. Well, if that's the case, then when we look at the changes that we see right here, am I still sharing my screen? I still am sharing my screen. When you start seeing these changes, these differences between, you know, which one is right? And if you don't know which one is right, you know, then that tells you that this change impacts your belief that God's word can be eternally preserved. So I think that is probably the biggest, if not the most important point when we start examining whether or not the Quran has been perfectly preserved, because it says that it has been perfectly preserved. And it's the same, the same Quran that exists on eternal tablets with Allah in heaven. Okay, so I think we've kind of beat this horse to death. Rad, Robert, are you okay? I'm going to bring you back on, my friend. I don't know if he just hurry up and ate fast or if okay, let me unmute there. Oops, sorry. Okay, there you go. You're back on, Mr. Robert. Go ahead.
Oh yeah, I'm a fast eater. I was hungry. I forgot what I was going to say. Oh, yeah. So the whole thing, now think about this. I just thought maybe this would be a good thing to end the show. Even if what they're saying is true, that somehow this thing was miraculously preserved, photocopied on a laser jet, you know, whatever, okay, down to minute detail, okay, it's still hard. I can make a perfect copy of a $100 bill, okay, but it's still counterfeit. And I can perfectly preserve that $100 bill, but it's still counterfeit. You know what I mean? Either way, the Quran is just completely and totally wrong. The main point that I'm interested in this is because to show the Muslims, say, hey, look, you're talking about textual variants, you got the same deal. Okay, now let's deal with what the actual text says. And this is why our Bible is correct, listen to this is what it says, and this is why your Quran is wrong. Because this is what it says, and it's wrong in just about everything. And I just thought I'd just share that. So that's it.
Okay. All right. Well, for next week, do you guys have any ideas? Let me go ahead and minimize this. I quit sharing the screen. Let me see if they're in the chat. Do you guys have any ideas for next week? Robert, did you raise your hand or I just didn't lower your hand? It looks like Robert, did you have any ideas for next week?
Yes, you didn't lower your hand. But as far as next week, I don't know, how can we get Muslims to come in?
Well, that's what I'm
saying. Yeah, how can we get Muslims?
Yeah, that
Marshall was supposed to be bringing to peace.
Marshall, I don't want to have anything to do. Okay. Marshall's still sending me emails, and I just don't want to have anything to do with that guy. He's just kind of he's, I mean, after, I mean, when you sit there, I mean, when, I should have.
He said he was bringing this, he was bringing them all in.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that lends to his lack of credibility again. And he you know, because he was saying, well, I can bring in Mustafa Ahmed. And I'm like, well, do we really want Mustafa Ahmed to come on here anyway? But I said, if you can get him, go ahead and bring him. But after this shtick that he pulled last week with getting my account deleted, I you know, because he sent me this email. He says, I'm never going to report you. I swear on Allah. And when you swear on God's name and you still turn around and do the same exact thing that you swore that you weren't going to do, and I have it in writing, I got pictures of it, that to me just tells me where, you know, your soul is at. I mean, if this is the Allah of, you know, that you believe in, the Allah of the universe, and you're going to, I don't know, that I don't know how much lower you get than that. Jay, do you have any ideas what a good topic would be to draw Muslims in for next week? Anything at all? Let me unmute you. I don't know. Unmute. Let me try it again.
Yeah, they usually like stuff that to do with the Bible. I mean, I would have thought this topic would have brought them in. So, I mean, this one kind of got me not really sure.
Okay, but something that deals with the Bible, would you think? Ed?
I really don't know. I thought this one would have drew him in, but I guess it didn't. So, go ahead, Ed.
I was just wanting to, I don't want to be privately here. This link right here, I think once you actually, I don't know if it'll give you everything. Oops, that's not right. That should be true. It may let you read the whole book with the true setting. But I think if you read this book or obtain this book, you change your mind on the doctrinal difference of the Quran, because I believe what has happened is a serious doctrinal change in the Quran since the 1924 edition was released.
Are you talking about Brubaker's book, Ed? Is that what you're talking about?
No. I'm talking about Gabriel Sama's book.
What's the name of the book again?
The Quran, hold on. The Quran misinterpreted, mistranslated, and misread. And I put a link in the text field there.
Oh, I see.
It'll give,
okay.
It'll give you a Google preview of it. I think it'll change your mind.
Okay, mistranslated, misread. And in what ways would you say is the most prevalent? Is the biggest way?
Well, I mean, there are complete passages that have the meanings have been completely changed. And I think because of guys like the leaders of the 1924 Quran, or the guys that were also involved with the, you know, when the Levant was dismantled in 1917. And I think this is their way of getting the vengeance that they wanted by releasing this Quran, and it was going to take some time to do it. But reading the book by Gabriel Salma, we do find a lot of variation in the doctrine, I think, anyway.
Okay.
Just from the way the verses have been changed. So.
All right. Well, that would be, well, and here's where the way I see it. That would require a Muslim to come in and play defense. And if we're going to truly want to bring them or give them something to come in, something that they would have or at least feel competent, and that's the thing, they would feel competent at discussing, that would make them think that Christians would be on the defense about. Is there a topic out there that you guys can envision that that would include? I see our friend Robert. Robert.
I should have sent this for a topic. The Mutazilite controversy.
I can't. It's wherever you're at, it's really a lot of background noise. I can hear you, but there's a lot of background noise. It makes it very difficult to understand. Our friend Stephanie is with us today. I told Stephanie this week on Facebook, I said, "You've lost your mind, girl." No, I haven't. Yes, you have, Missy. I'm going to unmute you, Stephanie. And you always have great ideas. And I'm going to ask you if you would know of a topic that you would think would draw other Muslims in. Oh, no. It says my internet connection is unstable. Let me check one thing here. Just make sure that it's still working. Okay. Is it there? Okay, Steph, I'm going to unmute you. Now, if you don't want to talk, you don't have to talk. But if you can give me a topic, I would appreciate it. You're unmuted, ma'am. Are you there? She's muted herself. I don't think she wants to talk. If she wants to talk, she'll raise her hand. Okay, well, what I'll do, guys, is I'll send out, Robert, I'll send you an email or solicit an email from you. I'll send it to Chris. I'll send it to Steph. And we'll try to get something figured out. Ed, I agree that, you know, when you would think that they would want to come in and defend the Quran, but what I found that when we were discussing, I think it was last week, we were discussing the idea of the Trinity. And I thought, okay, well, this is something that would draw them in. And Magda came in, and you know, he had a lot to say. But a lot of those, the things that he had to say were already, you know, just statements that had been refuted earlier in the show. So, what we'll do is we'll work on a topic. I'll get it out to you guys this week. Next Sunday, I am in town next week, so we'll be having the show at the same time. Same, what was that, the topic, the Mutazilite controversy, the Muta, is that like a Muta marriage or something like that? Robert, just hit yes or no. I'm looking in the comments section here. Is that Muta marriage? You might not be listening. All right. Well, I'm going to cut the show, guys. Thank you for coming so very much. Barack, you didn't have your hand up at all, which is okay. We appreciate you coming along. I hope we didn't bore you to death with what we had to say, but we will be back here. Okay, Jay's raising his hand. Let me unmute you. Jay, go ahead. Unmute. Why is this not unmuting here? Okay. Boy, let me try it over here. Let me try something over here because my okay. All right, so it is working. Jay, I'm trying to unmute you, dude, and it's not coming. Do you have your own mic muted? Jay, sorry, mistake. Oh, you don't have your hand raised. Okay. All right. Well, the bottom line is that we will be back here. Next week. If you guys want to send, if you have any ideas, send me an email, Eric Thekifer, TheCapper, at gmail.com, and we'll take a look at it, and we'll be running next week's show, and we'll try to make it a little bit longer than what we did this week, and hopefully next week, somebody, please, for the love of life, tell me to hit record at the beginning of the show so that I don't make the same mistake again. Okay, y'all be good. We'll talk to you next week. God bless you all. We're going to stop the recording. We're going to end the meeting. We'll see y'all. Be good. Okay, my blog talk radio audience. Well, that's always interesting when you have a a show going like that. We'll see what how the audio comes out, and then I'll take the Zoom audio, and I'll try to splice it into BTR and see how much we got there to listen to. You guys be blessed, and we'll be talking to you real soon. Bye now. I have to end the show, end episode.